on 2FM. With Green Firm, a nourishing addition to any sandwich, salad, stir fry, or snack. Natural protein your way.
Thanks to Emma Power for getting us over the hump day. It's Wednesday, the 9th of June, and this is Game On.
So in this evening's show, Munster's Rainbow Cup ambitions are cut short by Welsh COVID. We'll get the latest on that and Andy Farrell's role, or if he will have a role with the Lions this time around.
That's what I would say to you if I was your club coach or if I was your international coach. But I'm not. We're your Lions coaches. And a gallant effort, good defence or good spirit ain't good enough at this level.
As the boys in green show more signs of promise, Stephen Elliott is with us to discuss the lessons learned in Hungary as Portugal away is up next.
The whole team was excellent. I thought defensively the boys at the back were very good, and if it wasn't for them we could be down. They were great tonight, and look, fair play to everyone.
We'll have Aoife Sheehan and Nadine Doherty as Camogie and ladies football reach league semi-final stages in both codes. And what next for women's hockey team after coming up short in the Euros earlier?
The semi-finals from this group will go to Spain. It's finished one goal apiece. Ireland have to make do with the fifth place playoff. Spain, though, through to the last four.
If you want to get in touch, you can text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM.
Game on 2FM.
So, Marie, the Guinness Pro 14 Rainbow Cup has come to pretty much a conclusion for the Irish teams after the positive three COVID-19 positive cases for the Osprey squad that played last weekend. Because of a public health mandate in Wales, all of the travelling party from the Ospreys have to self-isolate, so their match against Zebre this weekend can't take place. Not against Zebre, against Benetton can't take place. So, as with the rules that were set out before this competition even started, that draw match becomes a nil-all draw. But the team who weren't guilty, I suppose is the right way of putting it, of having COVID in their camp, get awarded 4 points. So that means Benetton will move through to the Northern representatives in the final. I think that's the best way of putting
it.
That competition just was nothing straightforward about it from the start. That means the dead rubbers this weekend, aren't they?
Somebody
Leinster
actually asked
the
me
Dragons,
today,
Munster,
Ruby,
in Italy.
About it in the gym, and I spent ages explaining it this morning, and then it came out and it was like it was gone. Pointless.
Yeah. But even, like, I didn't really think about it. Like, rugby at this stage in June, all right, Lions tour or whatever, but club rugby at this stage, it just doesn't seem right either, does it?
No. Well, Cian Tracy from the Irish Independent is with us to go through. Just, I guess, Cian, first of all, it's been a bit of a disaster since the start. There's been a huge amount of issues and just uncertainty, really, surrounding the competition. They were doing everything they could to try and get it played. They are getting it played, but you'd have to wonder, is there any point?
Yeah, absolutely. Even, Marie, when you think back to how last season's Pro 14, which had only had 12 teams, was finished up early. And, you know, last season is only a few weeks ago, really. So it was a really disappointing end because you didn't have any playoffs at the end of that campaign to allow for a cross-hemisphere competition, which it just never seemed like it was going to be a runner in the middle of a pandemic. And, I mean, it's... In fairness to the tournament organisers, they have got something up and running, and some of the games have been pretty good to watch, but you've had issues like with captain's challenges. I personally think that's been a disaster. The games have been running on so long, and the idea, I suppose, behind the Rainbow Cup and then was that you'd have the best kind of representative from the Pro 14 taking on the best team in South Africa, whereas in reality now what you have is Benetton taking on either the Bulls or the Sharks next week, and neither of those teams, whoever it is that comes through, won't have any of their Springboks players playing because Rathi Erasmus has already made it clear that they're not going to be playing so close to the Lions tour. So look, Benetton have played by the rules as much as anyone else. It's like Ruby said there, I mean, when everyone signed up to this, they agreed to sign up to the rules, like I said. But in reality, Benetton had two games against Zebre, who are continuing to offer nothing at all to the league. They got a walkover. Now, to be fair, they did have a good win against Glasgow and 14-man Connacht, but I don't think it's a fair reflection to say that Benetton are in any way the best team in the Pro 14. But look, if anything, it probably sums up just what a bizarre season it's been for rugby in general. And look, yeah, we're going to have this final next week and it's on in Treviso as well. But it's going to be nothing like, I think, the tournament organisers had hoped from the outset.
I don't think you're being harsh, Keane, but I mean, Benetton didn't even win a game in the regular Pro 14 season, so this definitely isn't the final that the organisers had in mind.
No, absolutely not. Like you said, I think they lost 15 games and drew one in the regular season. But look, if you get two games against Zebre, like, that's essentially a guaranteed two wins, and they took advantage of that. But it's not like when the Rainbow Cup was designed, it was supposed to give us a taster of what's to come next season when we have all the big South African franchises, you know, regularly playing the Pro 14 teams. But in reality, it hasn't given us a taster of what's to come at all. I think it's like, and this might sound harsh, but I think it's probably a blessing in disguise that the Springbok players won't be playing next week for whichever team is representing South Africa in the final, because, like, in all reality, they would have absolutely hammered Benetton, and that's not good for the competition either. I know people will argue that Benetton are there on merit, and absolutely they are, but at the same time, it's not a good outcome for the competition. It's good for Italian rugby. Like, Italian rugby has had a tough kind of couple of years, but this isn't, in my opinion, the improvements, like, the way they need to find a way forward by, you know, having two games against Zebre and having a walkover, you know, out of five games. Like, it's really not many, isn't it? And you look at the table now, it's already been updated. They're on 22 points, which means that Munster's game against Zebre, ironically enough, on Friday, is essentially a dead rubber. And it throws up, like, all sorts of, you know, like, confusion, because, like, a team like Munster nailed their colours to the mast from the outset, saying that they wanted to win the Rainbow Cup, and, you know, it would have brought an end to their 10-year wait for a trophy. Now, personally, I think it could be a blessing in disguise that they don't end up kind of ending that drought by winning the Rainbow Cup, because no one is going to remember the Rainbow Cup in years to come. And you have other guys, like, you know, it's hard to, like Munster, like I said, when they set out their stall, they've played, like, a pretty strong teams throughout the competition. They can only have themselves to blame because they lost at home to Connacht. But other teams have looked at the Rainbow Cup as a chance to blood more young players. And even you look at someone like Andrew Porter, who got injured playing in essentially what was a meaningless match last week against Glasgow, and now he's ruled out of the Lions tour. So, yeah, it's been tricky, let's say it like that.
When you look at the final, there'll be no Springboks playing because Razi Erasmus wants them for the Lions tour. But what about Damien Delande and RJ Snyman? The report today from Jacques Nienaber suggests that both will be able to join up with the Springboks shortly. Have you any idea, Keane, of what really happened the other night with that fire?
Like, Damien Delende spoke to a South African media outlet, and I think we can really only go off that. And he said that one of the players, so it was obviously Damien Delende, RJ Snyman, Mike Haley and CJ Stander, were having a barbecue at a fire pit by the sounds of it, and one of the players decided that it was a good idea to throw petrol on the fire, which caused an explosion. So, like, it's incredible story, really, when you think of it. But and while the players have come out of it, you know, pretty shaken, like, I was speaking to Stephen Larkham about this yesterday, the players are pretty shaken, and Snyman and Delende have suffered, you know, significant burns, so they have to meet a specialist again on Friday. They're very lucky that this wasn't an awful lot worse. I don't think we really know the full extent of their injuries, and of course Jacques Nienaber is, you know, pretty optimistic and hopeful that, you know, they'll be fit, but I think much will depend on how they recover. Obviously, they're going back to the specialist this week. It's been a bizarre week for Munster in so many ways, and with, you know, they've been rocked by this in the last few days, and now the news that they can't even get a chance to qualify for the Rainbow Cup final is kind of the icing on the cake of what has been yet another, I would say, frustrating season as a whole for them.
Yeah, it really has. We've had quite a few texts in as well, Cian, and one that is for you. Munster blew it against Connacht. If they were in the final, you would have a different tune, and that's from George.
Well, I did say that Munster were the architects of their own downfall by losing to Connacht, but no, I don't think I would have, to be honest. I think it would have been great for Munster to get the monkey off their back, because they'd have people like me, you know, asking him about a 10-year drought. But to be fair, I really don't think the Rainbow Cup is going to be remembered by anyone in a few years' time. even we had the law trials that were introduced, like I said, like it was kind of a make-up competition as you went on. You think back to how the fixtures were scheduled, the derby games were fair enough, it was easy to understand why they were played, but the games that followed after the derbies, it was very hard to understand like how they came about, because there didn't seem to be any rhyme or rhythm to what was going on. So I disagree with George there.
And just one from Hugh and Cork as well. He says there's too much pointless rugby being played at average quality.
It's all to do with TV money. They need the they need the income. Come on, guys. It's fairly obvious.
Well, exactly, Ruby. You're right. Like, and that was one of the reasons why they pressed ahead with the Rainbow Cup. It was to ensure that, you know, the South African TV companies were on board, and like that is a huge aspect of this. They needed the income. But I guess my argument would be, at what cost? I think the Pro 14, as it was last season, playing out without going straight to a final, would have definitely been a better product to watch. And to be fair, there has been some good games in the Rainbow Cup, but I think, if anything, the Rainbow Cup is going to be remembered for stuff like the Captain's Challenge and how long games have actually been dragging on for.
Yeah, hopefully they will learn from that, because 2-hour rugby games will be difficult to maintain people's attention if they're on the television. And just before we finish up on Simon and Delande, so they're meeting at a specialist on Friday, Cian. When will there be a further update on their condition?
Well, you see, the issue is, like, Munster season is obviously finishing on Friday, so like after that they're technically handed over to the Springboks, but they won't be allowed to get on a flight or travel until the specialist signs off that they're safe to do it. I guess it's important to point out here as well that Snyman is still recovering from a torn ACL, which he did on his debut last year, so he's not even fit. I'd imagine it's going to be an uphill task for him to make it back for the Lions Tour anyway, and let alone without having the burns on top of it. So I think in an ideal world, the specialist signs them off and says that they're okay to travel. But after that, they'll be with the Springboks. And the kind of the sense coming out of the press conference today with Shaq Dean Arbour was that he was even hopeful that they could be fit enough to play in the warm-up test against Georgia in a few weeks' time. Now, it's easy to say that, but I think ultimately it will come down to what the medical professionals say and what the specialist says on Friday.
And Cian, speaking about the Lions Tour, well, the Springboks playing the Lions, obviously, last week David Nusafora gave the all clear for Andy Farrell to go and join Warren Gatland's coaching team after Ireland had played their two friendlies against Japan and Fiji on the 4th and 10th of July. But Warren Gatland hasn't exactly jumped at the opportunity, has he?
Yeah, it's been a bit of a strange one. I was kind of expecting that maybe there would be an announcement, but I think, number one, it was really important. I think that Andy Farrell stayed with Ireland and did have those two tests against USA and Japan. Now, I know it's not exactly a tour, but like these games can be hugely beneficial in the long run for Ireland, particularly with getting new players involved and seeing what they're like. So from that end, I think it was really important that he was involved in it. Actually, if he does end up going on the Lions Tour, which I still think he probably will, because to be fair, Gatland did want him from the outset, but Farrell was loyal to Ireland. But I think you'll get the best of both worlds, because Andy Farrell would be able to travel over to South Africa after Ireland's two games and still be in time to make it for the Test Series. And again, it's important to remember that South Africa are going to be in Ireland's 2023 World Cup pool. So, you know, time spent analysing the Springboks this summer, I think, would be hugely beneficial for Irish rugby going forward, because, like I said, you'd have Farrell coaching Ireland for the two tests and then going scouting the opposition, the main threat, I guess, in the pool in the 2023 World Cup.
Well, let's hope Warren Gatland does invite Andy Farrell then, and he can do that reconnaissance. Is that the right word, Marie?
Yeah, that works.
There, thereabouts. Cian Tracy, thanks a million for taking our call. We'll be back after the break with Stephen Elliott on Ireland's draw with Hungary.
FM. Game on 2FM with Green Farm. Healthy dinners made easy with Green Farm's high protein cooked chicken breast fillets range. Available in selected stores nationwide.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back to Game On. So Stephen Kenny's Ireland made another step on the road to progress, I suppose. I definitely felt like it was progress watching them last night. I know they beat Andorra the other night, but I thought Hungary, better opposition, definitely a history in the game. And I thought there was more to it. Watching it just as a fan, Stephen Elliott, you knew what you were looking at. Do you think it was a step in the right direction?
Yeah. I think it was, yeah. I think, like, listen, you're watching the game, and obviously after the Andorra game, the first 70 minutes of that, you're a little bit worried, thinking are things kind of turning around. But the fact that we obviously got the few goals late against Andorra, and last night, the one thing for me is I think we looked a lot more organised and structured and solid. I didn't feel like Hungary were going to break us down at any stage, and that's a big plus, I think, internationally. Like, you got to start first and foremost having that solid unit to kind of build from, and that's something that I don't think we kind of had so far under Stephen Kenny.
Obviously we kept the ball, which we have been doing a bit, passed it around a little bit, almost around in circles, from one being back wing back across the back three, holding midfield around and round. We never looked like conceding, but did you ever think we were going to score that wasn't from a set piece either?
No, and listen, that's a good point. I think the fact is, I was looking at the game, and if anything, we were a little bit deep at times. Even Troy Parra, who for me was coming kind of into the midfield positions at times, and the fact that we had three midfield players in there, I was watching the game thinking one of the midfield players needs to get him out of that position to kind of get him up a little bit closer to Adam Oida. And these are the things I think Stephen Kenny will look at. At the when he looks back on the game and think that there's definitely things, obvious things that he can work on. But yeah, I agree, we didn't really look like we were going to break them down from open play. Obviously the header from John Egan started the game off the crossbar, was a set piece, and that's still kind of looking like a main threat. And obviously Stephen Kenny's come in and he spoke about how this football he wants to play, he wants to change kind of the mindset of the Irish player and the way we're kind of structured to play right through the levels, and that'll take time. There's no quick fix for that, but I think Stephen Kenny hasn't come out and said it, but I think first and foremost you've got to get a solid unit there, and you've got to be strong defensively and not concede and then build from there. And I think there was a few positives, especially late on in the second half. I think when Daryl Hogan came on, I think he made a huge difference, and he was a player for me that I thought should have probably started the game. He would have felt a little bit unlucky, Daryl, I think, not starting the game, because I think when he has come on for Ireland in the previous games, he's always looked like he's kind of done something that kind of stood out. And even when he came on, he created a couple of chances. His first touch, I think, he came on and he controlled the ball and put a good ball across the box, and then obviously late on he slipped Ogbeni in when he had just come on, who looked lively himself. So there's definitely positives to look at there. And listen, it wasn't the finished article, the performance, but I think if we go back to the previous 11-12 games where we didn't look great at all, I think there was definitely a base there to work with. And I think Shane Duffy as well, he's another player that came in and he kind of, there was a lot of criticism of late, especially this season, his time at Celtic didn't go with the plan, but he came in, and I think he's, more importantly, we all know he's a strong defender and he's a real leader back there, but I think his distribution of the football at times was a lot better than we had seen for Ireland in previous games, and it was good to see him do well, because no doubt he would have needed that lift going into the off season.
Yeah, he did really well, and I think his interview afterwards as well was quite revealing. Just, you could see how much it meant for him, and even on that point of his distribution, you definitely, when you think of him building from the back, I suppose it's not something that you would have automatically think is part of his game, but he did display quite a good passing range as well. And you're talking there, Stephen, about the importance of getting that unit together, and it does start with the goalkeeper, and that is something that is hugely positive. We now have two goalkeepers, and it's even hard to nearly pick between them, which should be number one, Gavin Bisogno or Caoimhín Kelleher. Caoimhín probably a little bit busier and obviously has that base in Liverpool, but Gavin Bisogno was just as impressive, really.
Yeah, I think that's a great point, Marie. I think Gavin Bisogno made a great save first half, obviously, from the header, and he's a keeper who hasn't played. You have to remember, Gavin Bisogno hasn't played much football at all in front of big crowds. Like, obviously, he's playing for Rochdale, and I think last night was the first time he actually probably played in front of a real hostile crowd. So that alone would have been a great experience for him, and he done himself well. He was good with the ball at his feet as well, being that extra passer at the back. But I think for me, Caoimhín Kelleher, when he came in, I think he used class. He just looks so kind of composed, and even when he makes his saves, he looks like he's not overstretching. He always looks in control of the situation, and that'll come from having that experience with Liverpool, playing in them Champions League nights. And yeah, I think Stephen Kenny's very lucky going forward with his goalkeeper situation. But for me, obviously nothing against Gavin Bisogno, because he's a terrific keeper and obviously he could go on and become Manchester City's number one, but for me, Caoimhín Kelleher came in to play in your first international game the way he did, I know it was only a half, was really good, because he made two great saves too, but it's just his overall composure, and he just looked like he was so comfortable in there.
Our next games are competitive ones, Stephen. Could you still see Stephen going back to Randolph?
listen. You can't mistake how important having experienced players is in the squad. Like international caps, playing in big games, big international nights with crowds and all that. That you need that around these young lads. And Stephen Kenny has come in and brought a lot of young players in to kind of to experience international football. But I think maybe he might kind of look, because if he does want to integrate like a lot of young players into the outfield situation, maybe having an experienced head at the back will probably, he'll probably lean towards Randolph if he's fit and available for the Portugal game and the qualifiers. But that said, if he's not available, I don't think he'll have to worry about any of the other two lads coming in.
Yeah, they certainly equipped themselves really, really well. The midfield is an interesting one, because in isolation, you know, you look at Knight and Harahan and Cullen, and they had some really good moments. But do you think that there's balance there, or is there a way to find more balance in that midfield area?
Yeah, and that's probably one area, Marie, where you come away and you're thinking, has anybody really grasped that position, like grasped one of them slots and says, listen, this is my role. I'm going to be the main pick in there so far under Stephen Kenny's reign. I don't think anybody has. And listen, the three lads that played in there last night, they put in solid enough performance without being outstanding. But I still think there's room for somebody to come in and say, listen, this is my place. Obviously, me personally, I like Alan Brown in there. I think he offers you that little bit more kind of offensively, naturally goes into the offensive positions. And if you are playing, say, with a Tri-Para or a Daryl Horgan off the front man, his automatic starting position may move them a little bit higher up the pitch. And I just think that was a little bit of a problem last night. I think we had too many bodies too deep, and I do think Adam Ida was a little bit isolated at times, and it's very difficult, especially as a lone striker, when you're up there on your own without having bodies around you. But yeah, there's still a few question marks in midfield. I don't think Cullen, Knight, they've done well, but have they been outstanding? They still need to do a little bit more for me to be the automatic pick, I would say. Obviously, you got Jeff Henrick as well to come back, bags of experience. So there's still a few question marks in their positions, and I'm sure Stephen Kenny will keep an eye on them at the start of next season to see who's playing well and who he thinks may suit the team when the qualifying games come round.
Look, we're Irish, so the wheels are back on the bike. We're rocking and rolling. Portugal away next, then a home game against Azerbaijan and Serbia. What do you think we can expect? Can we get a competitive win, a couple of draws, and maybe sneak a win? What way do you see those three games going?
Listen, there's no doubt they're going to be tough games. Straight away, you're looking at Portugal. Obviously, we'll see how strong they are over the next few weeks. Obviously, in the Euros, they've got some really, really top players playing in the Premier League. Obviously, there's the Cristiano Ronaldo effect. He's still going strong despite his kind of years. So they're bound to be strong. You obviously got to looking at maybe taking a draw in one of them games against either Portugal or Serbia. You'd like to think, if you've got any chance of doing anything in these qualifying campaign, we got to beat Azerbaijan both home and away, and hopefully kind of other teams drop points. But I think Stephen Kenny will go away from the game, the last couple of games. I know it was only Andorra, but scoring the four goals, winning that game comfortably in the end, and then putting a solid display in last night, he'll definitely go into them qualifiers feeling a lot more kind of sounder and relaxed, rather than that hanging over his head another defeat and kind of no goals gone in, because I'm sure that was a burden for him. And I think he looked like a relieved man after the game last night, listening to him speak. And I think that's a good thing, because obviously the players as well will gain confidence, and he would have probably learned a lot about the players as well over these few weeks in and around the camp, in the training ground. And because again, that was the first time he had them for a prolonged period, and you do learn a lot about kind of different people's personalities in and around the group. And I'm sure it was a really important few weeks for both Stephen and his staff and the players themselves.
The game was in ways overshadowed, though, by the incident when the Irish players took their knee and the Hungary fans booed them and continued to boo them throughout. It was really, really disturbing. And I can imagine how difficult it was for some of those players, especially because when you think of the run into this game, there was so much spoken about how diverse this Irish team was, and it was so celebrated. And we saw Shidozie Ogbeni come on and become the first African-born player to represent Ireland at senior level, and it was just such a really good story coming into this game. And then that happened. It was pretty disgusting, really, Stephen.
Yeah, I don't quite understand it myself. Obviously, everybody has their own beliefs regarding that, but the bigger picture here is everybody knows why players are taking the knee. It's being highlighted enough, and if you're going to boost something like that, then I think you're just adding to the problem. I just think society's just got to step up and realise, like, this is part of the problem. And I don't know, everybody has their own beliefs and what way do you want to go about things, but you just have to respect people. It's all about respect, or about, obviously, race and what have you. It's all about respecting people's beliefs, and I think the sooner, the better everybody can kind of sing off the hymn off the same hymn sheet regarding respecting, no matter what race you are or what nationality you are or wherever. You just got to get on with the football and the sports side of things, and I think that's the most important thing. And the fact that the supporters are booing players taking the knee, I think it's just quite sad, really.
But should we not be looking at it as in, Marie, we're proud of the Irish players for what they did, and why are we worried about what Hungarian fans are doing? They're nothing to do with us.
They're nothing to do with us, but there's these young players like Ogbeni, who's 24, and Omar Bamadeli, who's 18 years of age, and they're going out for this absolutely amazing moment, something that they'd have dreamed for their whole life. Their family are sitting at home watching them, and they're being subjected to abuse, because that's what it was. And I was sitting there really disgusted for those players and for their teammates, that their big moment, this defining moment in their career, was ruined by what are supposed to be football fans.
But you cannot, it's, to me, they can only look at the decision they made themselves to take the knee and what their beliefs are. And if others don't choose to follow suit and choose to boo them,
but
that's
maybe it's
their
not
loss.
About beliefs, it's racism. Like, that is racism.
No, sorry, belief is the wrong word. It is racism, but you cannot change every society within the world. You can only try and change them. And they were going to get plenty of abuse in their lives for lots of different things. I think we need to think and say, right, well done to the Irish players. The Irish fans didn't do it. And let the Hungarians sort themselves out.
I just don't think that it should be acceptable. Like, I think that there should be people that are behaving like that shouldn't be acceptable. They shouldn't be allowed to go to football matches, because they shouldn't be allowed to represent what football fans are about.
And who's going to stop them?
Well, their FA should. Shouldn't give them tickets.
Well, will they? Will FIFA do anything about it?
Yeah, listen, I know what Marie is saying. It leaves a bit of a bad taste, but I think the lads are strong enough mentally, like, you know, being around the football environment. And I know they shouldn't have to be subject to that, but I think they're strong enough lads to be able to kind of look beyond that and realise the bigger picture here is that they're making their debuts for Ireland. Like Ogbeni, being that first African-born player to play for Ireland, I think it was a really proud night for him. And I seen his tweet he put out last night, and I think that spoke more than what the booing of the Hungarian fans did about what he felt about the evening. So I think we just got to not brush it under the carpet, because it needs change, and it needs change quick, which is why we have players taking the knee and doing all other things to try and cut this out, not our football, our sport, our the society in general. But I do think it's going to be, there's no quick fix to sorting this out. So I think these lads that did make their debut last night, I think they'll be strong enough to kind of put that to the back of the head and concentrate on what was good about last night for them.
Yeah, well, I do sympathise with them, because it is a very difficult situation, and it's a very difficult situation for their teammates and for everyone involved as well. Just before we finish up, Jordan Henderson and Roy Keane, I won't say it's a spat, because Roy Keane made the comment, Stephen, that he was questioning why Jordan Henderson was going, but in fairness to Henderson, he gave an interview afterwards and he handled it really well, and he said, look, he does have something to offer. He is a lot fitter, and that he knows and the team in England know how fit he is, but also said he's good for the old card trick and sing-song, and you played with him. Is he good for those things as well?
Yeah, I listened to Roy obviously after the game, and listen, Roy was just being Roy. At times, Roy will say something tongue in cheek, I think, a little bit, especially on the English television. He'll try and rub people up the wrong way, and you have to remember, Roy is a Man United man, and Jordan is a Liverpool man, so he'll be thinking along them lines as well, getting a little bit of kind of one-upmanship against Liverpool. But I think Jordan Henderson, what I found funny about it is, not funny, but like Roy, I don't know if you've seen it on the Liverpool website over the last couple of days, there was a couple of videos about Jordan's dad speaking about Jordan growing up in Sunderland and obviously going on to play for Sunderland and Liverpool and winning the Premier League, Champions League, Super Cup and what have you. And actually, if you go into that, Roy, actually, I think there's a testimonial on the website from Roy and some other people that have been prominent in Jordan's career. I think Roy was the one that gave him his opportunity at Sunderland. So it was a little bit like, I don't know, I thought it was a little bit kind of bad taste by Roy to kind of say that publicly about a lad that not so long ago he was bigging up and giving him a good testimonial on the website, which tells me it's a little bit tongue tongue in cheek. And maybe, listen, I'm sure Jordan and Roy still possibly speak to each other. And I think both players are big enough and bold enough to be able to. Obviously Roy's not a player anymore, but you know what I mean. I think both of them are big enough and bold enough not to let it affect our relationship if they do have one.
Stephen, before we let you go, last night we was all about the Euros. Who do you fancy for it?
I was watching France actually after the Ireland game last night, and you can count them out just because some of the players they have, and they've got goal scorers. Even Giroud, when he scored 50 goals now for France, and that, so you can't look beyond them, world champions. But for me, I have a sneaky feeling Portugal. I don't know why. I think they've just got, I know they're a little bit aging, but they've got some really star quality through the squad, and they've got that man, haven't they, Cristiano Ronaldo, who on any given day can turn it on even despite his years. And I would say they'd be my little kind of outside shout, Portugal. I just think Cristiano Ronaldo, he doesn't go to these tournaments and stay quiet usually.
You make an impression. Stephen Elliott, thanks for taking our call. We'll be back with Sarah Cheers. Scott after the break.
Game on 2FM with Green Firm. Naturally good food packed with protein. Game on 2FM.
Now, earlier today, Ireland's World Cup qualification hopes were put on hold as Spain kept them at arm's length, denying them the win they needed to reach the Euro Hockey Championship semi-finals for the first while. They had to await a couple of games to be played this afternoon, but now they know that they are going to face England on Friday in Pool C after England drew with Belgium, missing out on the win they needed to reach the semi-finals. Sarah Scott was watching all of those games today and joins us now. Look, Sarah, let's start at the game earlier on today. I think it was pretty frustrating, really, because Ireland had the game in their hands, getting that early goal, and unfortunately some key decisions, a bit of game management, they just let themselves down really towards the end.
Yeah, Mary, they're very gutted. It was a very disappointing end to the game, having had such a positive start going ahead after 2 minutes. I know that, you know, they've known Spain and played Spain, you know, a number of times, and, you know, it was always going to be a really tight game. But I think the manner in which they kind of finished the game was the most disappointing.
Sarah, Spain equalised from a penalty corner, and a well-worked penalty corner at that. They dummied off the stop and a player appeared at the back post unmarked. Will the Irish girls be thinking, how do we not see her?
Well, in terms of penalty corner attack, normally their main threat is Gigi for Olivier, who normally goes direct. But because she wasn't on the pitch, they switched it up. And normally the post player would have that covered, but I think they were a little bit thrown. But, you know, set pieces, everyone has a plan B, and that was their plan B. And obviously they've done their research.
Now, Sarah, Sean Dancer and Roisin Upton were both interviewed afterwards and both extremely frustrated. Let's hear from them.
Obviously, very disappointing result for us. Certainly a game that we were obviously hoping to do really well at, and certainly the way the game started to unfold, we were certainly in a really good position to try and get the result out of it and get to that semi-final place. I mean, Spain are a good team, and yeah, look, they did really well to block up the centre of the field, and we just needed a little bit more quality sort of through the midfield up front to hurt them a little bit more, I think.
I think right now, you know, the overwhelming feeling is just absolutely gutted. I think after we scored in the first quarter, we just put ourselves under too much pressure, and we needed to manage that phase of the game much better. We responded well, I suppose, in the second, third, fourth quarter, but we just weren't clinical enough. But yeah, look, they're a good side, and they did close up the middle, so we'll debrief, and we've two more games to go, so I suppose you can't be too disappointed for too long.
Roisin Upton there and Sean Dancer. Sarah, you can see, or you can hear from listening to Roisin there, just how disappointed she is, because she knows that they really had a chance to get to that semi-final.
Yeah, and Roisin is, you know, such an influential player for Ireland, and clearly very, very, you know, disappointed at having scored the initial goal herself. But I think, you know, the last phases of the fourth quarter, you know, Spain had a corner and then Ireland had an opportunity, and Shirley slipped on the delivery of her sort of short corner strike as such, and, you know, they were looking for a deflection, and I think if they'd made contact with that, they would have had some either reward or goal. So, yeah, they're very disappointed.
Chloe Watkins looked quite animated at the end of the game. She was speaking to one of the officials. Have you any idea what that was over?
Yeah, I think what happened was the last build-up phase, there was a really bad tackle on Anna O'Flanagan in the centre of the pitch, and Ireland were looking for a referral. Obviously, they lost their referral, but an umpire can use her referral to have a look. And if they had had a look, Ireland probably would have been awarded a short corner. Unfortunately, the camera angles for us, we couldn't quite see, but I think that's what she was extremely frustrated. Plus, there was an incident just beforehand down the other end of the pitch where she kind of had been rugby tackled to the ground. So probably it was a combination of those two.
Just overall then, this competition, we know that they really wanted to get to a semi-final, but they need to show some form as well heading to an Olympic Games. I know it's not over and they have two games left to go, but just from knowing the team so well, how do you think they have performed so far, Sarah?
Well, I think, you know, this competition by nature is quite grueling, and sometimes it can be quite difficult to kind of have consistency. And I suppose with the build-up, you know, it's the same for everyone with COVID and everything, but they would have been, you know, performance-wise, you know, they were much better today. But I think, you know, it's one of those things really where, they will be looking for better performances going into the Olympics. But I think that, you know, the game against England now is going to be a matter of, you know, fitness, getting sorting out the tiredness. There's a lot of tired bodies out there today.
And Sarah, when you look at Sean Dancer's squad, he has 18 players in Amsterdam. He can only bring 16 to Tokyo. This game against England, are there players who will be playing for their seat to Tokyo?
Yeah, I think, you know, with this Irish squad, they have been extremely unlucky, you know, with injuries right from January, you know, losing key players to Zoe Wilson and Bethany Barr. And then, you know, currently in the squad, there are a few very experienced players managing Nichols. So I think they're trying to manage that as best. But, you know, I would imagine Sean has a fair idea of who he wants to bring to the Olympics and probably bar maybe one or two places. So, yeah, that England game, if he rotates his full squad, will be, you know, winner takes all.
So it is winner takes all. They are playing, it's a fifth, sixth place, and whoever gets fifth gets a World Cup place. So there is so much at stake in that as well. How do you think they're going to fare?
I think the next 24 hours is going to be crucial in terms of rest and recovery for Ireland. And this is something that they manage very well in the World Cup and in the Olympic qualifiers. But the nature of this competition, you know, the classification matches are in the form of round robin, so each team carries the results occur between themselves and the other team from the original pool. So they'll go in to this match against England plus one, but England will go in plus four. So they'll play England on Friday and then they'll play Italy on Saturday.
Okay, so there still is quite a lot to play for.
Yeah.
Therefore, if my maths are correct,
so glad you're doing the maths review here.
A draw against England is absolutely of no use to them because they're still going to be minus three. They'll have to beat
exactly.
Italy by considerably more than whoever England play on Saturday.
Yeah, that's it, yeah. As tournaments go, it's very complicated.
It's a bit complex, all right, but anyway, we'll figure it out at some stage.
And just before we finish up as well, we were talking to Jill Pinder a couple of times in the run-up to this era, and a lot of the focus of the conversation was on Sean Dancer's game plan and what he was trying to do different. And, you know, she mentioned that they were looking to play with a little bit more intensity, a little bit more of attacking prowess. Are we seeing much of that?
Maybe not as much as we would have liked to. I know in the Spain game, they created so many chances going forward. There's an awful lot of goal-scoring chances. And obviously, if they had scored that one more goal, it would have made a huge difference. I'd say he would have been slightly disappointed in terms of build-up play, connectivity through the midfield. It just seemed to be playing with shackles on today, not playing with as much freedom maybe as they would have in the past. So I would imagine that game against England, maybe that he'll be able to kind of let them play with a little bit more freedom, and hopefully we'll see an Irish victory.
Yeah, hopefully it'll be great to get that World Cup place and also to have the momentum heading into an Olympic game. Sarah Scott, thanks so much for joining us.
your dinner ready in a flash with Green Farm's new high-protein cooked chicken breast fillets. Available in selected stores nationwide.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back. It's now time to turn our attention to ladies football, and we are getting to the business end of the league with the semi-finals and playoff or relegation playoffs coming up this weekend. Nadine Doherty, before we get to the fixtures that are coming up, this whole weekend was in danger of being overshadowed by a fixture clash, but Tipperary's Ladies Football Division 1 relegation playoff against Westmeath has been brought forward by 24 hours to avoid a clash with the Camogie Division 1 semi-final. So look, it's been averted. We are so familiar with fixture crises and clashes, but this is good for Orla O'Dwyer and Roisin Howard, who are both in the frame to play both codes for Tip this weekend.
You know, usually when this comes up, myself and yourself are talking about how frustrating it is, because it's usually the other way. And it's brilliant for Orla and Roisin, obviously involved this weekend, but I think for all dual players across the country, it's a really welcome move by the LGFA. You know, that lack of flexibility that we've seen in the past has been frustrating, but this is just so refreshing. So look, hats off to whoever made the decision. I really commend them, and I really hope it's a sign of things to come, you know, in terms of discussion and planning ahead in the future. Because, you know, like, we are fully aware of the busy schedules of that fixture secretaries have in both codes, and even finding pitches. And it's a very difficult job, you know, and I think this weekend shows though it can be done, and let it be a positive reference point, and I suppose a reminder in the future that, you know, when we're told it can't be done, well, we can go back to this and say it can. So, you know, look, hopefully, as I said, it's a sign of things to come. That'd be great.
Yeah, they would be great, and hopefully it is the start of it anyway. So this weekend we have Donegal versus Cork and Mayo versus Dublin in the semi-finals. And Nadine, I have to start with Donegal, because you haven't really been very, positive about how you think they're going to get on. But there they are in the semi-final, and they beat Galway again, unexpected, but they just keep delivering week after week.
Yeah, totally. And you know what? I'm just going to have to keep going against them and not tipping them. Hopefully they'll keep proving me wrong. But look, you know, the game itself, a really entertaining game. And it was a funny game, really, because, you know, I felt at times you were watching it and you had two fairly evenly matched teams. But when Donegal went up a gear, Galway just couldn't cope with them, you know. It was hugely apparent that it was Donegal who were much more clinical and economical up front. Their interchange play was so sharp, their movement off the shoulder, their understanding of each other and where they are in the pitch. I mean, for any coach, you could take snippets of their forward play and teams would learn a huge amount. And I just think this week as well with Donegal, their decision-making all over the pitch was brilliant. They finished the game during that middle third, the last 10 minutes of the first half. First 10 minutes of the second half, they absolutely stunned Galway. Played some of the best attacking football that we've seen from any team this year. And look, with four goals in the first half, Galway were never coming back. Few contenders for goal of the season as well. Really good stuff. And, you know, the Galway defence, which we also spoke about last week, Marie, Donegal completely exploited them. Galway are struggling defensively, they moved Nicola Ward into, you know, a more forward position in the first half, and they left themselves so open, and when they moved her back at half time and made another few changes, it was too late, you know. These two teams will meet in the championship further down the line, and I know Galway are, you know, they're short a few of their household names in this league campaign, but in saying that, I just felt the form Donegal showed at the weekend, Galway would still have struggled to contain them, and Donegal were full value for their 16-point win, and they didn't allow Galway to build any real momentum for any sustained period of time. So, no, look, Donegal have definitely confirmed themselves as the best team of the chasing pack. You might consider this harsh, but I do think, and the Donegal management team themselves have spoken about this, that to be considered real challengers for an All-Ireland for me, they have to beat Cork in the semi-final. And, you know, they have to beat Cork or Dublin in a knockout league match or a championship match. But they'd be very happy with where they're sitting right now. And as a Donegal fan and a Donegal person, I'm absolutely delighted for them.
You're a hard fan to please, but Geraldine McLaughlin and Karen Guthrie both had exceptional games last weekend. Could you see Cork paying extra attention to them and making it a bit difficult for Donegal this weekend?
They definitely will. Like, Karen Guthrie is around a long time, as is Geraldine, you know, and they're both young enough girls. Their finishing's incredible, and every team they play against, Ruby, gives them special attention. And not, you know, with Karen and Geraldine, if the chances are created, they will bury them. Like, they showed it at the weekend. Anywhere inside that day, if the girls get the chances, they'll take them. Cork are also going to have to give special attention to Niamh Hegarty, who I spoke about last week, playing amazing football. Niamh McLaughlin, their captain. You know, Niamh's a wonderful player and has really, really come into herself this year. My only worry for Niamh this weekend would just be when the pressure's on, her decision-making sometimes lets her down. But as the weeks have gone on, that's improved. And I can see her playing a very cool game this weekend. And yeah, Cork will have a whole lot to worry about, you know.
Yeah, they will. And then the other game at the weekend is Mayo versus Dublin. And we had a really in-depth conversation about Dublin last weekend, focusing on Lauren McGee and Niamh McAvoy and just the fact that they hadn't fully came back in. But they're very much back now, Nadine.
Yeah, very much back. And, you know, looking at Dublin at the weekend, it was a very routine performance for them. But what they were able to do, you know, was we saw Niamh Collins coming in a full back. Niamh, as you just mentioned, Marie, you know, she definitely reminded us that she can influence a game. Sinead Ahern dominating on the score sheet and a few other new faces getting game time in, and then other familiar faces getting a rest. So look, it's just setting them up nice for the semi-final against Mayo.
Were they the players you were having a go at last week who were playing Aussie rules and couldn't get back up to the speed of the game, was it?
No, we weren't having a go at them now, Ruby, at all.
The two of you were. I was driving home from wherever I was, Wexford last Wednesday, listening to the two of you, and I was thinking, why would they go to Australia to play? Because they were getting paid.
It was critical analysis, Ruby.
And a chance to look at something else, and the two of you were slating them from a high hill, you were.
No, you were just cranky because you were driving all the way from Wexford.
I live in Kildare, it's not that far. I wasn't driving all the way to Donegal from Wexford now.
What we were saying was, you know, for the girls themselves, because it's such a short time frame where they're usually at this stage of the season, you know, last week they weren't. They're making gains absolutely every week, and we expect them to have a huge say in the championship. But, it's, you know, down the line...
But don't forget the boat.
No, but... I mean, you look again, another player who's just coming back into the fold, Orlo Dwyer. Obviously, she won with her team over in Australia, but she's late coming back into the fold. But look, all these girls are really fit. As you said, they've been playing professionally. It does just take a little bit of time to adjust back in, and I'm sure the two girls will be pushing for a place against Mayo.
Yeah, and Mayo are definitely growing into this campaign, as you'd expect, with the new manager. So just call the two semi-finals for me and also the relegation playoff in three words, Nadine.
Can I have a few more than three? Heart says Donegal, head says Cork, hoping I'm wrong again this week. I can't see anything but a Dublin win against Mayo. And I just think with Tip and Westmead, the two injuries that Tip sustained over the weekend, Maloney and Morrissey, I think they'll find it really hard against Westmead and Westmead to possibly squeeze it.
Okay, Nadine, as always, thanks so much for joining us. Now we are going to turn our attention to Camogie. Aoife Sheehan joins us, and Aoife, it is also the business end of the Camogie League as well. We know our semi-finalists now and we know who they will play, and look, it is the expected four who have advanced: Tipperary facing Kilkenny and Galway taking on Cork. But I'm going to start with the Tip and Kilkenny game, because I know you were watching the Limerick-Kilkenny game last weekend, and unexpectedly really, Limerick asked quite a few questions of Kilkenny. They're not as invincible as everybody thought.
Yeah, hi Marie, how are things? I suppose, look, from Limerick, I suppose I'm a Limerick woman here, and I was gutted for the girls. You know, they played fantastic. They asked an awful lot of questions of Kilkenny. They led them, I think, for three quarters of the game, and were just very unlucky that, you know, two goals snuck in with Mary O'Connell and Aoife Doyle. But Limerick really asked a lot of questions. I think... you know, Dowling will be really, really happy with the game, though, that they got, because they got an awful, awful frightened Burr. And, you know, he was without Claire Phelan and Davina Tobin from the backs. But even if they were playing, I think just the way Limerick attacked them, they just fought for every ball. And, you know, it was a really, really good test, though, for Kilkenny to get. So I think they'll be happy with it. Their forward stood up. You know, Miriam Walsh was key for them, I think, on the day. And she kind of, you know, dug them out of a hole, really. And she got them over the line, I think. So, you know, Tipperary won't fear playing them now at all. They had a good win over Offaly at the weekend. But I think it was kind of, you know, one-way traffic for them, really, for a finish. And you're just mentioning Orla O'Dwyer there for the ladies footballers. I'm excited to see if Orla will make, you know, an appearance for the Camogie team.
I think she did the warm-up last week, Aoife.
Yeah, I saw a few pictures of her at the game, so I mean, she'd be a serious asset for them. I think she was a big loss to them in the semi-final that Galway beat them in last year. She was gone over doing her pre-season with the Brisbane Lions at that stage. So if she features this year, I think, you know, it could just be the difference the Tip need. Tip were without Karen Kennedy. I think she was out due to sickness last weekend. Karen got an all-star course in the backs for, you know, Tipperary last year. But I think it's going to be a really, really good test again for Kilkenny, and maybe, you know, Tipperary can go on and get to the final. They were kind of robbed last year. You know, they got to the league final last year and it wasn't played. So it'd be kind of justice for them, in fairness, if they could get back to it again, I think.
You were saying there, Aoife, about Miriam Walsh driving forward, and it was a huge part to play in the two Kilkenny goals. But what about Aoife Norris and goal for Kilkenny? That was an incredible save.
Yeah, she's super
save,
you know, incredible saves, right, Ruby? Like, I mean, you know, between Rebecca DeLee, I think, and it was an Anya Cunningham, she denied Rebecca a certain goal. I think she put her body in the line for that one, and the same with Anya. You know, otherwise we'd be here and I'd be talking about Limerick, you know, in a semi-final. But yeah, she was key for them, and definitely, you know, she stood up as well and she was counted.
It was really harsh on Limerick, really, and I think I was probably with you as well, Aoife. I actually thought they were going to get over the line, but look, again, new manager, you're seeing a new intensity with them, so much positivity, but it is really hard to close that gap on the top four. And even when you look at Tipperary, really, it's nearly hard to close that gap on the top three. But this Tipperary side, like I'd mentioned earlier about teams growing into a competition, at the start of this league campaign, talking to Aoife Murray, we questioned the balance on the team and whether Bill Mullaney knew his best 15 players, or almost whether he knew where to play his best 15 players, what positions. But certainly against Offaly, it looks like he's figured it out, because they were strong right across the 15.
Yeah, I think so. And they have a very good spine as well. So, like, if you look at Mary Ryan, even, I think she was kind of, I suppose, a free player a bit in the back for a lot of the game. But, like, Mary is a season campaigner. I mean, she's a brilliant Camogie player, and she kind of commands things in the back, I think. You know, she really kind of leads from the back. Then Raid Everston was centre back last weekend. As I mentioned, Karen Kennedy was out. And then just up the centre, I mean, Cate Devan, she needs no introduction. I think she's, you know, she's known, you know, as one of the top Camogie players in the country. But, you know, she got a great hand at the weekend from Grace O'Brien. Grace O'Brien chipped in, I think, with 2-4 herself, you know, because a lot of the time, I think, the talk is of Tipperary, you know, that they rely too much on Cate, and that Cate, I suppose, shoulders a lot of the responsibility in terms of scoring and things. But definitely there was a good spread at the weekend. And, yeah, it is hard to get the balance right. But I think, you know, they've Sarah Friday as well. She played very well last weekend from half-back. And Niamh Tracy as well has moved to, you know, half-forward. She was playing at the weekend half-forward. She was midfielder last year. So it is about getting the balance right. But I think Tipperary, they do want to kick on. You know, it's no fun, you know, being in the semi-finals every year and not kicking on to a final. And they'll want to, you know, so they have to try and find something that's just a little bit different this year. So that's why, as I mentioned, Orla O'Dwyer, I think, could be, you know, just that little bit, you know, of a help to them to try and get to a final this year and push on as well in championship.
Obviously, Roisin Howard got two yellows and therefore had to leave the pitch. Does that mean she's out of this weekend?
Yeah, I think she will. Well, I'm actually not sure if she will be, Ruby. I didn't see anything about that this week, whether she... I think it might be dealt with if it's two yellows, to be honest.
That's often the case, all right. Aoife, another game that I think will be a fascinating encounter, just given the time of year that we are in, is Cork and Galway. And, like, I don't know why, but it just feels like both of them are almost under the radar a little bit, even though Cork have scored 629 already against Tip and Waterford, and Galway scoring 624 against Clare and Limerick. But yet, we're not talking about them that much, which is probably exactly what the two managers want.
Definitely, and I think, look, they didn't get a quarter final, so, you know, they went straight into the semis. And both teams, to be honest, would have probably liked another game. For Cork this year, I think Cork were, like, bitterly disappointed to lose to Kilkenny last year in the semi-final. And even, you know, they were trying a new style of play last year. They do a lot of hand-passing and playing, you know, through the lines. And I think, you know, Paddy, as you know, people might have seen the interview or post-match interviews of Paddy last year, he was so disappointed, and he even suggested, you know, that they didn't stick to the game plan, and that's why they lost, you know. So for Cork this year, like, and I always think Cork are favourites nearly every year. I mean, they, you know, they have a massive peak and they have great tradition, and they've, you know, some brilliant players. They're after moving the team around a little bit as well. You know, Katrina Mackey has gone out midfield with Aisling Thompson. They're having a great partnership so far in the league. They have a new look full back line as well. So Libby Coppinger, Aisling Egan, and Maeve Cahalan are the full back line, which they're going to get a good test now at the weekend against Galway. You know, the last day out against Limerick, the McGrath sisters, you know, did a lot of damage. They chipped in a couple of goals, and as well as that, Ailish O'Reilly as well is you know, she's lightning. She's got lightning pace. She's very fast, and she's a very tricky girl to mark. So I'm looking forward to seeing how that goes as well. How the Cork full back line deal with the scoring threat of the Galway attack. And otherwise, you know, these two teams, they know each other so well as well from the last few years. They had a serious battle, I think it was 2 or 3 years ago, in the Gaelic Grounds in the championship semi-final. There was nothing left on the field that day, you know, so they're great rivals as well. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, how it goes at the weekend.
Okay, Aoife, who's going to be in the final?
I think it's going to be Cork and possibly Tipperary. I fancy Tipperary to maybe have a little bit of an upset over Kilkenny.
Controversial from Aoife Sheehan.
Very, very.
Aoife, thanks so much for joining us. Ruby, that's all we have time for.
That is it, Marie. Tara Short is up next. You'll be back tomorrow. I will join you on Monday, if that's okay.
Yeah.
Well, it doesn't matter if it's okay or not. I won't be back till Monday.